In order to explain the definition of love that I'm going to give you this morning, I think I have to tell you a story or two, three actually, that will let you know why it is that I'm drawn to this definition as opposed to others. I want to go back to my childhood and my poor mother who had four boys and was always trying to get us to attend to what it was that we were wearing and what it was that we were doing, but of course we never did. And on the scale of obliviousness, I was the worst of the four. And one day we were sitting in synagogue and my mother looked down and she said, "You know you have two different socks on." And I said, "Yeah, I guess I do." And then she looked down again and she said, "You know you have two different shoes on." And I looked, and in fact, one of them was brown and one of them was black. But it had been dark in my room when I got dressed, so it wasn't my fault. And she said it very evenly because she wasn't so surprised, since it was earlier that year that we had gone down, as you know, when you live in Philadelphia, you go down to the shore. That's where you go. That's what New Jersey is. All of New Jersey is the shore. And by the way, if you thought that it was cold in the sanctuary this morning, that was just out of sympathy with those who were undergoing the blizzard on the East Coast. We wanted to show a certain fellow feeling. But once we were going down to the shore, and it was my job to take the groceries and put them in the trunk of the car, which I did, and then we drove down to New Jersey, and my mother opened the trunk and they weren't there. And she said, "Did you put the groceries in the car?" And I said, "Yes, I did." And she said, "In this car?" I think I've made my point, but I have one more story, and I told it last night, and I don't want to deprive you. Several years ago, it was actually in Minneapolis, I was doing a scholar in residence, and I stayed at the rabbi's house. And a year later, I came back to do a speech during the week, and I went to dinner at his home, and we were sitting there eating dinner, and I looked around, and I was very proud of myself at my powers of observation. I said, "You've redone this room, it's different." He said, "David, it's a different house." Now, I tell you this because I'm going to offer you a definition of love, understanding that no single definition of love is adequate. They all have shortcomings, they all have problems. But nonetheless, because this is something that I struggle with, I want to define love as attention. When you pay attention, when you really pay attention, that's an act of love. When someone is talking to you and you manage to shut out all the many distractions of the world, and that person exists for you at that moment, so that you are able, as simultaneously the way God did, the mystics tell us, when God created the world, to contract, to make a space for someone else, you both get smaller because you shut out the world, and you get larger because you allow another soul into your own. That's love. And it gets harder and harder in our day for lots of reasons. First of all, we are flooded with distractions. We are constantly aware that there is an influx of information coming at us all the time. And so even as we pay attention to the text from that one person, we know from the dinging that others are trying to get in touch with us, and we are fragmented in our attention, unable to see the one who's in front of us. It's not only a syndrome that afflicts the modern world, I think it's particularly bad in our city, where you can't sit in a restaurant without looking over the shoulder of the person you're supposed to be with to see who's walking in. Because after all, someone important might be walking into the restaurant, and the person you're sitting with is just the person you're sitting with. And so again and again and again, we are reminded that attention is love. You've seen a mother with a newborn. That's love. Because the intensity of focus is complete. When couples marry, I sometimes remind them that during the Sheva Brachot, we talk about Began Eden Mikedem, the Garden of Eden. And why do we talk about the Garden of Eden under the chuppah? Because the rabbis tell us there should be, at that moment, only one other person in the world. Everyone else doesn't matter at that moment. They'll return. There will be other people when you emerge from that cocoon. The world doesn't disappear, but for a moment it disappears for you because it's a moment of love. In our tradition, we know that the greatest single experience that a human being ever had was Moses, who saw God panim el panim, face to face. And you know that at that moment that Moses had the opportunity to see God face to face, he wasn't thinking about anything else. He wasn't worried about work. He wasn't checking his phone. He was just there. And in this morning's parasha, we read that God says to Moses, come up to the mountain, the Heyesham, and be there. And the Kotzker Rebbe says, what does that mean? If you come up to the mountain, you're there. And he says, but it's not true. In our lives, often, we are physically in a place, but we're not there. So God says to Moses, don't only walk up the mountain, be here. Pay attention. Act lovingly. Most of us don't get the experience of Moses. We don't see God face to face. But every human being, we are told at the outset of the Torah, is B'Tselem Elohim, is in the image of God. So you do get to see God face to face. When you do, pay attention. Because to look someone else in the eyes, to listen, to offer something of your soul, to be there, to pay attention, that's love. It comes from deep within us, min hama'amakim, from the very center of our soul. Min hama'amakim is a psalm where the psalmist cries out to God from the depths, but it is also a song where the lover cries out to the beloved from the depths and asks the beloved to fill them up, panim el panim, face to face, min hama'amakim, as Noah Dore will sing for us now, from the depths.